Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Hey, 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 and welcome to the Feminist Book Club podcast, the show that brings you the best of the best feminist content. I'm your host, Neba from Notes by Neba, and today we are going to be sitting down with the author of Adrift, Heidi herself.
Heidi's book Adrift comes out today, October 28th, 2021. You can go ahead and pre-order it on any of the links that we have here in our description, as always. And with that, let's get into this interview.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast, Heidi.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. I just finished rereading your book earlier, right before our little call today. And I got to say, it is so adorable. It is so wholesome. And before I just kind of give away too much of it, do you want to tell our listeners kind of a little sneak peek about what your book's about?
Well, the book's called Adrift, and it's a picture book. And the art is by Anastasia Servarova, who is from Russia, actually in St. Petersburg. And the book itself, it's for young children, or, you know, children of any age. And it's about a little mouse who is caught in his boat in a big storm. And you can read, like most picture books, it as the story of the little mouse and how he survives the storm. Or you can, of course, read it as a metaphor about any rough spot in your life. For me, of course, it was written this past year, and it is a metaphor really for how you can get through something kind of scary and alone and get to the other side, where you can land on an island in the safety of your welcome community.
Yeah, wow, that's such a good summary of it. My gosh, I wouldn't have been able to put that better. So today we're going to be diving a little bit into this book, a little bit into you as an author, as a person. So I'm really excited to jump right in.
Awesome.
So we're going to start way back at the beginning. Your first story ever, your first story published was actually a mystery story about murder. And I know for a little while you worked as a private investigator. Would you say your knowledge in some way was helpful in writing this book? How did this even come about? This seems like such a wild turn from a child's picture book.
So it does seem like a very odd origin story for a children's book writer. But I did go to college and get a degree in psychology. And right out of college, I went to work for the Department of Corrections in Broward County, Florida. So I was a probation and parole officer. I was always a good writer. No one was surprised that I was a good writer because my mother is a good writer. Her name is Jane Yolen, and this year she's published her 400th book. So this is my 30th book. So in my family, we consider me a piker, published author, even after 30 books. But I was working in the law enforcement field. I worked as a private investigator. And on the day I found out I was pregnant with fast forward, she's in law school now. So this was a long time ago. I was hired to be a counselor at a battered women's shelter. It was, in a way, a really dream job for me. But unfortunately, with Madison, my daughter, when I was pregnant with her, I was so, so sick and I couldn't leave the house. I was that sick. So I had to turn down the job. So what really happened was I wound up joining the family business, which was writing. And that first story that I wrote was with my mom for a book called Famous Authors and Their Children Write Spooky Stories. And it turned out, and the funny thing about writing is lots of times your life winds up, and this really dovetails well with Adrift and the pandemic, but your life winds up in little pieces in whatever you write. So the story that was about a ghost and a little girl, and I was pregnant with a little girl, and she was staying at her grandmother's house, and my mother was just about to become a grandmother, and she discovers a ghost in the house, and she has to solve the mystery of how this woman, the ghost, became a ghost. And it turned out that, of course, it was a battered woman, and so it didn't even occur to me that all those little pieces of my life at the time wound up in that story until about 25 years later. Leave that. I mean, that sounds a little silly, doesn't it? But honestly, I didn't really realize it. But as a writer now who's been writing for 27 years, I really realized that it's almost impossible not to put little pieces of yourself into your writing, even if it's about a little mouse in a boat or a ghost in the grandmother's house. Actually, I have a series of books that my mom and I really on in my career that star a little girl that wants to be a detective. So you can see that link to directly to this little girl. And these books start out, I always wanted to be a detective like my dad when I grow up. He says detectives are born curious, and that's what I am.
That's really cute. Would you say your degree in psychology or experience as a private investigator has ever like been useful? This piece of your life has come into your books when writing a book?
Well, in a very real way, being a writer is being a detective. It is discovering the clues in the story and bringing it to a conclusion, sort of like solving a mystery, only the mystery is really all in your own imagination. And that's doubly true. I write a lot of nonfiction, so it's all research. So it's exactly what a detective does. And frankly, it's a lot of what a probation parole officer does, because one of my main jobs was writing PSIs, which is a pre-sentence investigation for judges. So after an offender was found guilty, the judge asks probation to write for them. And that talks about things like the impact on the victims and whether or not the person can pay the fines that are levied against them, stuff like that. So really, that all of the jobs that I had were really sort of research-based. And that's what being a writer is. When I talk in schools, I always tell them research is just another word that it's a big fancy word that means I get to read and study and learn about things I'm interested in.
Yeah, I love that. Being able to just kind of explore things that you want to is really the goal. And I feel like sometimes as we get older, we kind of forget that you can just look up cool stuff because you think it's cool. You know, not everything needs to turn into work or like a side hustle or, you know, something you have to be super serious about.
Yep. But I do have to tell you, if you're a writer, you do know that as a grown-up, because that's what we do all day long. I mean, I can just be doing something as mundane as scrolling through Facebook and there's a million ideas. And I write them down. Well, I was waiting for us to start this interview. I started, I'm going to show you, even though I know that this isn't being recorded, but I have a post-it in front of me that I just was starting to think, thinking about a book about birds for really little kids. I was thinking, what bird is gray and how can that add in? And I thought, oh, the great gray owl would be in a gray sky. So everything is all about little ideas like that. And that came from, I was just thinking about birds and looking out my window waiting for you. So all that as a writer, it's always looking for ideas and we write them down. I've got post-its all over the wall behind my computer. I have notes in my phone.
Gosh, with so many different places to like have all these notes, how do you keep them all organized?
Oh, that I do not keep them organized at all. A writer's brain, a writer's space. Nothing is ever neat.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. I know what you mean. I sometimes try to make an effort of like moving everything into one place at the end of the day, which has been a little bit helpful.
Yeah. Piles are a wonderful piles and post-its is basically my organizational system.
Oh my gosh. One thing I also noticed about your book is that you dedicated it to both your mother and your daughter. And, you know, being a very accomplished woman yourself, I'm really curious as to kind of how would you define feminism?
Oh my goodness. Well, I am a single mom, raised girls by myself. And I really feel that everything I do is really rooted in feminism. I can't, it's so just part of who I am that I'm surprised when people are surprised at what a feminist I am. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it makes sense. Yeah. By being female, it's an act of resistance. I think that's yeah, for someone, right?
And raising girls. But also, I think that raising strong and resilient children of any gender is one of the things that I think feminists are really proud of doing, that I know that for me, that's one of the most important feminist acts I can do, is raising children to be strong, independent, good humans. And I extend that out to children that I bring my books to. Like I try to really think about how to help others grow into these good humans. And my hope is that with Adrift, which is really about facing your fears and getting through them. My friend Lexi, who's a bookseller, calls it a big feelings book. But to really allow children to be who they are, experience the things that they do, and walk through the world to become feminists or good humans is the best act that I can do as a feminist.
Yeah, just kind of shaping the world to be slowly more and more what we would like it to be, right? One thing I also wanted to look at is, you mentioned, you know, you pull different parts of your life.
In order to kind of like pull all these different parts of your life together, do you pull from, say, the places you live on? Because you live on a pretty big farm, don't you?
I do. I actually, when I lived in the South for a long time, went to school in Florida, worked down there, lived in South Carolina and Georgia. And when my father got ill, and even if you don't know me, you may have grown up knowing about my dad, because one of my mom's books is called Owl Moon. And it is a story about my dad and myself. But I came home when he became ill about 20 years ago and brought my family back here. And so I moved back to our family farm. And he was a guy who grew up in rural West Virginia, running trap lines and fishing and hunting. So he really taught myself and both my brothers all about nature, and lots of my books are about nature. And that is one of the through lines. I would say that nature and feminism are the two, I would say girl power, are the two themes that run through most of my books, where Adrift may not fit directly into either one of those categories. You know, like I have one that I wrote with my mom called Not All Princesses Dress in Pink, which is one of the really early subversive princess books. There are lots of them now, but when we wrote it, there weren't a lot. And Bad Girls, which is a bunch of different women, felonious females throughout history, and sort of potted biographies about them. And then I write a lot of books about nature, which are really informed by how I grew up on this farm and hiking and bird watching, like Fly With Me and You Nest Here With Me and the upcoming Whose Nest Is Best. So yeah, those are the two real themes in my books. And I'm wondering if I can circle back to, you were talking about the dedication in Adrift. Maybe I can even read the dedication in this book, because it's sort of important to think about a book as a collaboration. So the dedication is actually for my mother, Jane, and my daughter, Madison, in their own boats in this same storm. And here I'm directly talking about the pandemic. You know, I wasn't able to see either one of them, even though my mother lives next door to me. And the two beautiful friends who helped me make this book, Nina before the story and Hannah after. And Nina and Hannah, though you won't find their names on the book, Nina is a friend of mine, also an illustrator and author, who, when I was talking to her, said something about, we may be in our own boats, but we're all in the same storm. And she didn't make it up, but she was the first person to say that to me early last year, which sparked the idea. And as an author, I know enough that if you go to bed thinking of an idea and you wake up thinking of the idea, you really need to write that story. And the other person is Hannah, who is the editor of this book. So I had one friend helping me in the beginning before the book idea, and one friend after, creating the book from my story. And that's a real, you know, collaboration. And I love that it's all women working on a book and informing my storytelling voice.
Yeah, I can see that like different parts of your life kind of manifest in the book too. One thing that was really great is that even though this mouse is kind of like facing the storm on his boat, there's a lot of other animals that are facing the same storm, you know, like there's the cats and groundhogs and like deers and bears and coyotes or whatever. And like, it kind of is nice to see that it's not just all the same people kind of going through the same storm. Everyone's got like different boats. Everyone's got different personalities and whatnot. And kind of seeing how these different people are all drawing energy from each other just to kind of weather their way through the storm is really, really inspiring and really wholesome.
Every culture, every people has a time in their history when they could not be with their community because it was not as safe to be in direct community, but that community still sustained them. And, you know, I'm Jewish, and you can think directly to times in the Jewish culture where it's been dangerous to be together, where Jewish children were sent off to pretend not to be Jewish, but they were still fed by that community, even if they were away from each other. So it's sort of bigger than the pandemic. It's really about community and how you come together, even if you can't quite be together.
Yeah.
That's the hope that people will take away from this.
Yeah, I mean, I think every piece of media, every voice that kind of like tries to give people a little bit of hope in these times is really, really helpful and kind of helps remind us, you know, the good things that people are capable of and, you know, what awesome creatures humans can be. How do you go about like picking illustrators for your books? Do you like decide color schemes? Does your illustrator design things? Like this is it's a lot different from, you know, more adult like people who are writing for like adult novel, you know, and they get to pick out like, this is the cover. For picture books, I imagine you have to be in conversation from, you know, the very start, right?
This is going to shock you, but we have no control over it. None at all. So occasionally, and this is the case with Hannah, the editor on this book, she did send some ideas and said, what do you think about this? And she did ask my opinion all the way along. But for the most part, and this is the way I explain it, is the writer thinks story, the illustrator thinks art, and the editor thinks book. So mostly we're actually kept away from each other. So a lot of the choices in the art, I did not give direction for. The fact that the little mouse has taken some things with him into the boat was the choice of the illustrator. There's a beautiful, the first spreads, the storm sort of has hands, which really makes you feel how small the mouse feels and how big, enormous the storm is. That was a choice by the illustrator. I think it's wonderful. I love it. There's one spread where when I got the art, the text says little mouse put his hands over his eyes. And the first sketches had little mouse putting his hands sort of over his mouth. So I said, ooh, it needs to be over his eyes. So that's about the extent of what input I have. And that's across the board, pretty much always for picture books, is that the editor and the art director are in charge of putting it together sort of from one side and from the other. But we do collaborate as much as we're allowed. And we like to think of it as authors that we are not standing over the illustrator's not standing over our shoulder telling us what to write. So we try to extend that exact same courtesy when they're doing the art.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, a great illustrator brings another level of storytelling to your story.
Yeah, so kind of like how the illustrator, you know, does their job and illustrates and you do your writing and you do the writing portion. How is your writing style kind of like changed or specialized when you are writing a children's book instead of a regular book? Like obviously there's some obvious ones in terms of like, you know, language has to be simpler, but how about the writing style itself?
Well, picture books are much shorter, obviously. I mean, that's pretty basic. So it really is a matter of, it's almost poetry. There's a lot that you don't say. We talk about show, don't tell. So there's not a lot of saying this is what happened and this is what happened. And there's no wiggle room. So when you're writing for children, you agonize over every single word. There's a lot of discussions, of course, in editing about is this the right word? Is this, you know, what can we do to make this section shorter? But the one thing I never do is talk down to children. I love having at least one, and I'm not intentional about this. It just happens. I always like to have at least one word that will stretch the vocabulary, because picture books are being read by adults. So children don't have to know the word to read it. Generally, it's being read to them so that they can discuss it. So like in Adrift, I use the word roiling, that the sea is roiling. Mm-hmm. So that's a wonderful word that adults should be able to read just fine. And contextually, with the art and the text, the child will be able to understand what that word means. And hopefully they will take it into their vocabulary. So it's all about condensing what you've written, making sure the story is still a full story with a beginning, middle, and end, but making sure that it is almost as short as a poem. So that is how I would sort of describe the difference in writing. And of course, now I'm working on a novel, like I said, and I'm writing a novel in verse. So I'm still condensing everything. It's just sort of ridiculous. I don't know why I'm doing that to myself.
I mean, concise writing, I think when it's done, you know, well, it really is the epitome of writing, because it's very easy to go on and on and on for like accidentally like, whoops, I just wrote 8 pages of so much description and so many things. So being able to tell that in a very like concise, distinct way, and still have your writing style come across is really challenging. So, and that's one thing I really, really liked about Adrift.
Thank you.
So I actually saw Adrift as, a really great metaphor for mental health, because, you know, it's obviously, you know, written during the time of the plague. We're still going through the plague, all kind of weathering the storm together. But a big factor that is kind of like impacted is everybody's mental health. So I'm curious, how do you make time for your own mental health, especially as someone who does so many things between like being a mother, being a literary assistant, being a writer, et cetera?
Oh my goodness, I drink a lot of chai lattes and occasionally a margarita. No, I'm kidding. I'm actually not kidding, but I think that early on in the pandemic, of course, I did a lot of pacing and crying like everybody, I think. But I know from experience that when you are a writer, sometimes the work saves you. Sometimes it is what you need to do. So I wrote a lot of very sort of angsty poetry. I wrote a poem about making masks and using the fabric that I used to make my daughter's ballet costumes with, which were very much look at me, and making a mask out of that same fabric, which was trying to hide her from danger. You know, so I sort through my feelings in that way. So I wrote a lot of, one day I thought, I'll publish my COVID poems. But sorting through my own feelings in that way, for me, has always been a mental health thing. And the other thing is, I know lots of writers and lots of artists of all different mediums are struggling with trying to write and feeling like they can't. And what I tell a lot of people is that the muse is very patient. And I've been writing for long enough to know that she does not go away. She will wait for you and she will appear when you're ready. And so not stressing about whether or not I'm going to write another book, I'm not worried about that. I mean, I don't know that I'll publish another book because that's not up to me. But having enough patience with myself to know that the muse is always there, I may just not be ready for her at that moment. And I had great weeks of amazing productivity where I'd write several books and lots of poetry, and I'd be reading other people's manuscripts for them and doing lots of stuff. And then I'd have a week where the only thing I could do is watch RuPaul's Drag Race. And just allowing myself that was really, for me in the last year, real mental health.
Yeah, I think making this distinction between what you can control and what you can't control is so important, right? Because on one hand, you can control, like, you know, you will eventually make books and the muse will come. You can't control the publishing, but that's okay. That's outside of your realm of things that can be controlled, right? I think that's a really great point, especially with, like, you know, people trying to have control over every single part of their life. And just we're seeing more and more that that's not necessarily true. So how can you, you know, try and maintain your happiness in a way that, like, is something within your control? What is the main thing you'd say you'd want to teach readers through Adrift?
Well, first of all, I would love to rephrase the question, because I am not a teacher, and I really always try and remember that I'm not actually trying to drop a lesson on somebody. The main thing is that I want a child reading this to enjoy this story. That's the most important thing. Other than that, I want them to take away whatever it is that they need from this book. And I mean from this book, but any other book. I assume that we are in this weird collective moment of trying to come back together and deal with nerves and figure out how to handle that. And there's some amazing, amazingly beautiful books being published about the pandemic and coming at it really straight on, talking about the helpers, talking about being in the house with your family, talking about what happened when the world stopped. This is really a step away from that. And so that kids can find themselves in this book and take what they need from it. There's a part, let me see if I can find the line in the book. So the book says, Even when it grew dark, the other boats were there, close enough to feel them near, but not close enough to crash. Little Mouse didn't feel alone at all. So every kid reading this book will have had a different experience over the last year and a half. And frankly, hopefully, when this book is read 10 years from now, it will be a different experience. Hopefully, it'll be a totally different experience. But every child has that moment when they feel alone or separate or not included or afraid or any of those emotions. And I hope that it's universal enough that every child reading it will be able to take from it the what they need if they want to read past just the story of this little mouse.
Yeah, I think no matter what, we'll have a different storm depending on what year it is. But this story definitely transcends just being, you know, yet another, you know, pandemic story or anything like that.
Yeah, and there's some really good ones. I encourage everybody to go out and look for them, because there's some really wonderful stories that have come out of this pandemic.
So that actually brings me perfectly into my very last question. Okay. At the end, we always ask authors if you guys have any books or authors that you would recommend for us, for our listeners and for us here on the podcast.
Oh my goodness. I couldn't even begin to tell you all the amazing books, but here, let me tell you the three books that I bought today, just today. They're all picture books. And one is Patricia McLaughlin's new book, and it's called, I think it's called Dear Mother Earth. I hope I got that right. And I bought Marcy Colleen, her new book. Aaron Becker is the illustrator. It's called The Survivor Tree, and it's just in time. Well, when we do this, when the podcast is on, it will be after, but we're recording this just before September 11th. And it is a true story, but told beautifully poetically about the tree that was found in the rubble of the Twin Towers and brought back to life. And it's a really wonderful way to talk about children, talk to children who weren't even born during 9/11 about that. Oh no, what was the third book I bought? It's The Traveling Camera, and it's by Alexandra Heinrich. And it is about, his last name is Heine, H-I-N-E, and I can't remember. It's a nonfiction book, but also told poetically. And he was the man who traveled around the United States documenting with his camera child labor, and was really instrumental in getting laws about the child labor child labor laws into place. So those are just the books that I bought today. I could literally go on and on and on and on. Debbie always has a new book coming out.
This is a nice spread. We've gone from, you know, like picture books to like Survivor Tree to things about nature. I like that it's a nice spread about everything. So thank you very much for that, for sure.
You're welcome. I love, we could do a whole podcast on picture books that I love right this very moment.
Oh my goodness. Good. Thank you so much for all of this and for coming on the podcast. Listeners, if you would like to hear an entire podcast episode about nothing but picture books, please feel free to comment on our DMs, comment on our Instagram, slide into our DMs anywhere. Thank you so, so much for joining me on the podcast today. I'm so glad that you could come and chat with us here.
Thank you.
Listeners, if you want to get in touch with Heidi, what would be the very best way for people to get in touch with you?
Well, I am on the old-fashioned Facebook as Heidi Stemple. That's S-T-E-M-P-L-E. And I am on Twitter and Instagram at Heidi E-Y-S. Easy to find me.
Awesome. And just as a reminder, during the time of this recording, it is October 28th. That means that Adrift is out in stores today, and you can go ahead and grab it. As always, links are in our description. And listeners, if you have a topic you'd like to discuss or a question you have for me, my DMs are always open. You can find me on pretty much any platform, YouTube, Insta, Twitter, TikTok, at Notes by Neva. You can find Feminist Book Club on much of the same similar platforms on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and always on our web. And if you join our actual community, you can join us on our Slack as well. So Heidi, thank you so much for joining us today. That's all I have for you guys today, and I'll see you on the next page.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.